Election 2011 coverage on Manx Radio.
Fastamai, good evening and welcome to Perspective. I'm Beth Espy. Today we're continuing our series of election programmes, talking to existing members who will be standing again in September. Tonight I'm joined by the youngest member of the House of Keys, one of the three Russian MHKs who's seeking re-election. He was educated locally, then gained a first-class honours degree before qualifying as a chartered accountant. Since his election in 2006, he's been in a number of departments, including the former DHSS and local government, and more recently, economic development. He's chaired planning and the Select Committee on Kaupthing, Singer and Friedlander, and has been on both the Overseas Aid and Public Accounts Committees. He's also responsible for legislation which will very shortly give nursing mothers in the Isle of Man the right to feed when and where they like. I'm talking about Jim Watterson. Mr. Watterson, good evening, and thank you very much for joining us.
Good evening, Beth.
Now, you topped the polls in 2006, so have those who put their confidence in you got value from their vote?
I hope so. I mean, it was a massive pressure to be under. Having topped the poll in Russian, I set my stall out. I hoped to get one of the three seats. I really thought I might squeak in at third. But to get top the poll was really overwhelming. I'd like to think I've worked hard for the people of Russian and for the Isle of Man over that last 5 years almost. So I'd like to think that people could put their trust in me again, and I'll be setting my stall out over the next few weeks on the doorstep. So watch the space.
We'll deal with some of the detail of your 5 years as MHK in a moment. But first, what would you say has been your main achievement when it comes to working within the political system as a member of government?
It's always difficult being a backbencher, in that it's hard to always draw the line between what you've been doing and the results at the end of the day, because so many people are involved. But there's a few things where I suppose I could say, you know, that was me and it wouldn't have happened otherwise. And the breastfeeding bill is, I think, one of those. Also the changes to the scrutiny system, which I moved the motion in January of this year. That's going to seriously change the way we scrutinise some government in Tynwald over the next 5 years. So whether I'm there or not, that system is being put in place, and that's something that I'm hopefully justifiably proud of.
What about as a constituency MHK? What's been your main achievement for Russian?
Well, in Russian, of course, at the moment we're working on getting a low-cost activity hall built on the playing fields at Russian Primary. It'll be the size of four badminton courts. The South of the Island came out top of a needs survey for sporting facilities and recreation facilities. So in order to put that right, along with my colleagues, I'm leading the bid to get the first of those down there in Russian.
How easy have you found it to balance the needs of your constituents with your day-to-day political responsibilities?
It's not easy. Douglas does have a big pull on your time when you're on so many committees and boards, but it's always got to be the constituents first. At the end of the day, they're the ones who put you where you are, and being devoted to your constituency is important. That's why I get out and walk around the constituency and meeting people. I'm involved in organisations in the constituency, such as the British Legion, such as Southern Befrienders, charities and causes which I firmly believe in, that also give me a view of what's worrying people on the streets down in the south.
Well, without doubt, one of the main issues over the past 5 years, which has had enormous repercussions, is the collapse of Kaupthing, Singer and Friedlander. The final report going to be debated in Tynwald next week. You were chosen to chair a three-person committee to look at a range of issues. I mean, one of them, I suppose, really an overview of how the Isle of Man handled that crisis. What was your assessment? Give us your assessment of that now.
I think on the whole, the Isle of Man did very well out of... did very well for the depositors in the Kaupthing case. It was a difficult one. I think the government was very well intentioned in what it achieved. It made a few trip-ups along the way. There were, for example, the early payment scheme, which was 1,000, then went up to 10,000. So I think lessons have been learnt along the way. But on the whole, though, the Isle of Man system has stood up to scrutiny, and what the committee's report has done is offer some improvements to the way that the system works, improving the transparency of the system. And on the whole, though, I think the Isle of Man has fared well and should be able to hold its head up internationally when it comes to talking about its finance sector, because when the chips are down, as they were with Kaupthing, I think we've really shone through.
As a result of your investigations, then, you and your colleagues at Alan Crowe and John Horton, would there be anything significant that's done differently next time?
Well, I do think that early payment schemes are going to be a feature of the landscape, because I think that it was recognised out of the BCCI collapse that 25 years just wasn't an acceptable return period. Also, I think changes to the structure of the Financial Supervision Commission as well, as a result of the recommendations made, hopefully will come to pass as well.
So you believe that that side of the political process is still worthwhile then? The notion of having committees to examine issues, reporting back, because it could be argued that some issues are just bounced to a committee, difficult decisions sometimes avoided. I mean, you want to see new standing committees to oversee the work of government to give greater scrutiny, don't you?
That's right. I have to say one of the more rewarding parts of the job over the last 5 years have been my work with the Public Accounts Committee. Maybe it's because I'm a bit of a sad accountant that this has appealed to me, but we've looked at some pretty big issues over that time: the budgeting process, the corporate leadership group, the reserves and the way that they're dealt with and handled. So we've stopped looking at some of the Tuppence Halfpenny issues and gone into some of the really big issues that are strategic to the island's financial future. And that's been very rewarding for me, as well as even doing a bit of actually doing some training for other members of the committee on audit and some techniques like that. So it has been really rewarding. But of course, much of that happens behind closed doors and isn't seen behind the public until you get a weighty couple of hundred page report that comes out.
I mean, it's a promise that nearly every election candidate makes, isn't it? And certainly you said it in 2006. You said it was time for government to be accountable. Have you scrutinised enough, do you think?
I think so. I think I've stood by those actions with the Treasury Amendment Bill that I tried to put forward, giving members the time to consider the budget without just taking Treasury advice about trying to give members the opportunity to talk to their constituents about what's in the budget before voting on it. And that's a crucial part of our democracy. Where is our money going? And to have it announced in the morning and voted on in the afternoon, I just don't think is fair on the people.
But just how workable is that, though? Because if you give everybody a chance to speak on every aspect of the budget, nothing would get done, would it?
Well, that's about how you amend the budget rather than speak about it. But certainly I think members should be afforded the time to go out and talk to their constituents about it. And I did propose safeguards to make sure that any amendment had to be cost neutral, had to be supported by at least four members. So there were safeguards in there for amending the budget. But I do think it's fundamentally important that where the tax money goes, the public is aware of where it's going. And at the moment, when the budget is announced in the morning, voted on in the afternoon, they're not having a say. It's not very democratic. And that's something that I think should be improved. I tried it with the bill. It lost 10-10 in the Keys, so the narrowest of margins. And I think it'll be coming back if I'm re-elected.
While you are a member of government through your political membership, ultimately you are still a backbencher. And so in some ways you really have the luxury of being able to voice opposition to various issues. But let's say you are re-elected, OK? You come back and at some point you're made a minister. There's a government policy you don't agree with. You're required to vote for it. What would you do?
It depends on how fundamental it is. It's one of those things. And it also depends on the chief minister as well, of course. The chief minister has the power to afford under collective responsibility that minister to speak or vote against a particular issue. If I felt strongly enough about it, I wouldn't be staying as a minister, especially if it's something that conflicted directly with what I thought was the best for the Isle of Man or the best for the people of Rushen.
Because it's what people say that they see quite a lot. People set out their stall in their manifestos. They say they're against this, they're for this, and sometimes that isn't translated, and there's no guarantee that that's not going to happen.
No, but the notion of collective responsibility, when it was written all those years ago, 25 years ago, the working document on that does recognise for example, manifesto commitments as overriding the collective responsibility of the council ministers. And for those who sort of study the constitution, they'll know that. Now, how that works in practice is down to every individual practicing within the council ministers.
We're constantly hearing at the moment about the difficulties we're going to face in the coming years. I think it's fair to say that while the island has fared pretty well recently, we've been fairly sheltered really from much of the hardship that certainly people in the UK have had to face. It is starting to bite though. We've got pay freezes coupled with the rising fuel and food prices. They're hard to bear long term. We're expecting confirmation of more bad news on the VAT front next week. What sort of tough decisions then do you expect the next House to have to make?
Yeah, I mean, let's not beat around the bush. It's going to be a lousy 5 years to be in politics. If you think that politics is about popularity, you're going to be sorely disappointed getting involved in it over the next 5 years. I think the sort of decisions we're going to have to be taking about how we can grow the economy, and that's going to be difficult because obviously that brings in things such as planning law, it brings in work permit law, which is all very emotive stuff. It's about striking the right balance there, and so we are going to need people of judgment who can strike that balance. And having been involved with both work permits and DED and planning for a 10-month period, I like to think that I have something to contribute to that. But that's
you wanted quite a radical overhaul, if you like, of the work permit system in 2006. That's one of the things you set out in your manifesto.
That's right. It was about making sure that we have it basically it coupled in with immigration policy, and that it suited where we had skill shortages, we could bring people over. But it was also about rigorous enforcement as well. And so it is a very complicated area, and there's cutouts and carve-outs and exemptions and things like that that really do need to be looked at very carefully.
So while you were on the had some responsibility for work permits, what did you do to try and do that?
I haven't been directly responsible for work permits.
You've had
10 months in planning. There is a consultation document at the moment which I've certainly had an input into, and hopefully that consultation will be looked at by people, and they will give their feedback, because I certainly have an idea of how I think it should go. But then again, of course, I'm only one voice on the department, so this could be one of the decisions that's going to be looked at again in the very near future. So the other side is about what we spend, as you say. So having sort of set out the stall for a successful and vibrant economy, which, you know, is absolutely at the forefront of what the Department of Economic Development is doing, we've also got to manage our government spending. And it's about getting more for less, and that's something that I think we've had some success in. Certainly working with Eddie Teer and the DHSS, it was the first year in about a decade that we came in on budget. So it can be done without cutting services, but it depends on the size of the loss of income. But we are going to have to look again at the scope of government.
Social care, currently one of the biggest areas of concern, both in the UK and the Isle of Man. It's certainly our biggest area of expenditure. I think in the 2006 election, you referred to the island's Rolls-Royce social provision. I mean, is there any scope to reduce our social budget?
There is. There's a number of things that I think could be done that might not always find favour, but things like the universal benefits system, the way that the family income support and income support systems work, certainly the way that job seekers allowance works, in certain instances, the way that the tax and benefits system operates at the moment, it's a disincentive to work. It's easier to stay on some forms of benefit. That's something that I think we need to address. And that certainly applies to job seekers allowance, where there are those who can afford to just live on the minimum of income support. And I don't think that's acceptable. And if they're not willing to go out and look for a job, it may be that one's provided for them. So that might be some of the hardline things that may not be particularly palatable to some sections of the community, but I think they are going to be things that we're going to have to look at in order to sort of prevent that becoming ingrained in culture.
I suppose one of the problems is that decisions like that are never going to be popular. I mean, you're going to set out your stall for those in the manifesto for 2011?
Well, I mean, I've said it on radio, so you pretty much hold me to that now.
If you are re-elected, is Treasury where you ultimately set your sights?
I don't know. I have to say, having said what I said earlier about Public Accounts Committee, I would like to spend another 5 years there. But that's my personal choice at the moment. If you asked me where I wanted to go, that's where I'd like to be, because it is about striving for value for money right across the full spectrum of government, across, you know, all the boards and all the departments. And I think that would be a good area to start. Certainly that's an area I've enjoyed. But who knows? It depends where you're asked to go, and a certain amount of buggins turn as well.
Not long after you were elected in 2006, you were quite critical of the then Treasury Minister, Alan Bell, for increasing overseas aid. I think you said that issues should be dealt with at home before money was sent overseas. You were then a member of that committee for a number of years. Could be argued you had some chance to try and change things if you weren't happy. I don't think anything fundamentally changed. So have you changed your opinion?
I would disagree that nothing fundamentally changed. I think that during the few years that I was a member of the Overseas Aid Committee, we dramatically changed the way that we operated in terms of ensuring value for money, ensuring that charities had the capacity to deal with the money that was being provided for them, that there was an appropriate audit route, and there was a methodical system for actually ensuring where the money went, rather than the the system that had grown up over the years of, well, this seems like a good cause, we'll support that. So it's now far more rigorously decided how we're going to spend that money. And I think we should be a lot more confident that our money is going to good causes in worthwhile areas, meeting Millennium Development Goals in areas that are the poorest in the world.
Let's turn now to your role as a constituency MHK. You've already talked about some of the main achievements that you feel that you've achieved in this area. What are going to be the main issues for Rushen in the next 5 years, do you think?
I think in Rushen, as across the island, it's going to be about maintaining a way of life. It's going to be about keeping a rural feel, a community feel to the place, rather than drowning in a concrete jungle of anonymity. That's going to be at the heart of what I would be hoping to achieve for Rushen.
What about invigorating your own patch in particular? I mean, Port St Mary, for a long time people have said it's just a dormitory town. I mean, you've said that pretty much yourself. What specific examples can you give us of what you've done during your past 5 years to try and breathe some life into it?
Well, obviously I've been involved as a member for the area in the regeneration committees. I've been involved in the harbour user group in terms of moving forward on an acceptable plan for a marina in the area. And if the funding is available, that may yet go ahead. Certainly regeneration is going to be key. And also through my work in the Department of Economic Development, you know, we have increased available grants for Outer Douglas, so you now get an increased weighting for setting up business outside of Douglas, which I think is going to be key, not only from an environmental but also an economic perspective, to people developing their businesses in local communities rather than everyone concentrating in Douglas.
In 2006, you want to see more government offices moving out of Douglas to other areas. We've seen that happen in St John's very successfully. Mm-hmm. Haven't really pushed for that down south, though, have you?
Well, I think I have pushed for it, and the ability to achieve that has been somewhat lacking, but I certainly think I have pushed for it. It's something that hasn't been delivered. It's something that I'll continue to push for.
One of your other big concerns in the run-up for the 2006 election was a standard of facilities for young people. Now, you did mm-hmm. form a think tank in mm-hmm. 2008
right.
and came up with 14 recommendations about how things could be improved, but it's been pretty quiet since then. What happened?
Well, what happened was that the report went into a government working group which took on that work, which took on the challenge that we had started, that I set up, and Bill Mullarkey and others came along were also passionate about the same subject and wanted to pursue it. Those recommendations went into that government think tank, so that government committee chaired by Anne Crane. And I'm afraid, I have to say, I would agree to a certain extent that some of them seem to have got lost. But I think we have seen some of the recommendations followed through, such as the hobbies fairs and things like that, that were sort of simple recommendations that we offered. But we haven't seen the one-stop shop for information. We haven't seen some of the other things that we did recommend in that report. And certainly it's very live on the agenda, but certainly in terms of sporting and community facilities down south. As I said earlier, this low-cost activity hall is going to be a part of the solution to that, certainly in Rushen. So I have to say young people are definitely on my agenda. As I said, also said in the last 5 years that I thought that young people should have a better financial education as well. And that hasn't been changed through the curriculum, but I have spent my time going to Castle Rushen, being part of the company programme, being a junior achievement advisor for that as well. So I'm, you know, these are subjects that I'm passionate about, and whereas I may not always be able to achieve them through government, I will sort of try and work on them in other ways.
You also want to see the Marine Biological Station converted into a bespoke youth and community facility. What have you done to try and make that happen?
Well, clearly that's turned into a business, which is something that I would welcome for the area, especially as the dedicated youth and community provision is going to be through the low-cost activity hall. So I'd like to say that's a win on both fronts for Rushen.
Talking about youth, and with you in particular, I mean, do you think you've got youth on your side? I'm going to say that since I'm the same age as you.
You're a bit older than me.
Only a little bit. Has that inspired any more interest among the youth of the island in politics, do you think?
I'd like to think so. Certainly the last 5 years, I along with others, have taken the schools, the year sixes of Rushen Primary, of Arbury and Scoil Pertlemoore, round Tynwald to try and explain to them what it is that we do, how we do it. We put them through a junior House of Keys sessions where they act as ministers and backbenchers, and they really get into it, and we vote on such things as the abolition of homework. But it really gives them a hands-on experience of Tynwald and the House of Keys, and so they should be better equipped come the age of 16 when they're able to vote to make an informed choice. Likewise with Junior Tynwald, which is where you and I started off and made our initial foray into politics, shall we say, and that now is still going, and I think that's another valuable part through the Commonwealth Parliamentary Association of what we do to make sure that young people are well educated in politics, are engaged and know how our system works. And I think that really has to be the future, and the way that we continue and do these things.
Again, before the last election, you were very critical of the 2001 to 2006 administration. You said you were disappointed with the actions and inactions. I'm afraid many people are now saying again that this is the worst government there's been. You have actually been part of that institution. How do you respond to that?
Well, I would have to say that I'm probably as frustrated as many of the people who would say that. I've spent as much time on the outside, sort of the council of ministers, trying to change things as well. I think my record on trying to push for areas of transparency and accountability on a wide variety of things, I've run up against council ministers on. So I have been disappointed in areas, and I have put a lot of time into trying to improve things. But as I say, as a backbencher, I think, as Peter Caron said in his mandate interview, there's one of me and there's a lot more of them.
But I mean, you've proved the success that one person can have. You've taken through a private members bill. Mm-hmm. I mentioned it in the introduction about giving nursing mothers the right to feed whenever and wherever they like. So if there's something you're passionate about, there's something you think that's going to work, that is an avenue you can take. And if you bring everyone on board, then so be it.
It's the magic bullet of bringing everyone on board is the critical thing. And, you know, we can all make a...
Well, if it makes sense, then surely people will go for it.
Well, that's right. And I'd say to see the Treasury Amendment Bill lose by 10-10 was particularly... troubling, because of course there's 10 members of the council of ministers, but yeah, it does mean that I've got to work twice as hard to make a compelling case for it in future. So yes, I think it's possible to make inroads where there's a consensus, and building that consensus is the perennial challenge of politics, and I say twice as hard to do when you're a backbencher than as a minister.
During the past 5 years, you and your constituency colleague Quinton Gill published the first ever collection of quotes and gaffes from the Manx Parliament, Tynwald Balls. Do you think that means you haven't taken your role seriously enough?
Well, I think it reflects the role I play in the community. As the treasurer of Southern Befrienders, the charity is there to link young people and old people to ensure that they have a fulfilled existence and independent living. And that book raised £7,000 for that charity.
Absolutely. But my point is that really it's taking the mickey out of the parliamentary system.
I don't think it takes the mickey out of the parliamentary system. I think we do a serious job, but it doesn't mean that we can't sometimes have fun doing it. The book is something that wasn't done on a huge amount of government time. It was done with our own time and resources. It wasn't funded from government money. And I think that sometimes people have got to lighten up, get a life. And I think those people who have bought the book have enjoyed it. And it's raised £7,000 for charity.
Well, Jim Watson, we're nearing the end of the programme. Just sum up for me what you think the main issues facing the Isle of Man in the next 5 years are going to be.
Well, firstly, it's the economy, stupid. And as Bill Clinton said, it really is going to be about growing the economy. It's going to be about reviewing the scope of government and getting more for less. And they are going to be the three themes that will define the next 5 years. They're not going to be easy. They're not going to be popular. But I'm willing to be part of it.
And you think you deserve to be re-elected on that basis?
I hope so. People will get my my leaflets, my manifesto over the next few weeks, and they will make their own choice. But I've tried my best and will continue to try my best for Rushen, for the Isle of Man, both at home and abroad.
How easy is it to condense those ideas into a manageable manifesto that people actually understand?
It is very difficult. I mean, you know, we wouldn't be in the job if we didn't have a wide variety of ideas on a wide variety of subjects. But that's why I'm going to be going around knocking on every single door in Rushen like I did 5 years ago, to make sure that what I'm reflecting in my manifesto is what people are talking about on the doorstep.
That's the key to success, is it, going round to every single house?
Well, I certainly believe in the personal touch, and I see people out walking around and I say, on the bus and all the rest of it. If you're not close to your constituents, you're no use as an MHK.
It's an interesting point you make about walking around. You still haven't passed your driving test. I mean, that must be quite difficult, mustn't it?
Still haven't started taking lessons. And no, it's not a big deal. And despite you know, the ups and downs of the public transport system as a result of the review, and I think I've been particularly vocal about that one for residents down south, I think we still do have a bus service which is perfectly usable for commuting purposes.
Well, Jim Watterson, Russian MHK, seeking re-election in September. Thank you very much for joining us this week on Perspective. Next week, James Davis will be talking to one of the Onca members seeking re-election, David Quirk. If you'd like any more information about the candidates who are standing in the 2011 election, you can visit our website, election.manxradio.com. But until next time, goodbye.
Election 2011 coverage on Manx Radio.